blow for blow in a war zone with only stones to throw. Vilified by all sides, vilified for small crimes. Forced to go blow for blow in a war zone with only stones to throw. Goliath.
This is Health on Earth.
Salud en la tierra.
Jinyan en salve.
It's the heart in Adam.
Briut ba'olam.
Pour la santé sur la terre.
Gesund in Welt.
Yinhong esai gai.
Afianzuri duniani.
Saúd para todo mundo.
Quiet and direct nai.
Prithivi monte shurine jokno.
Salamat dar jahan.
La salute su terra.
Health on Earth.
Good evening. This is Health on Earth 90.3 FM. It is currently 8:31 p.m. and this is Aliza, one of Health on Earth's show hosts and coordinators. It's great to be back after a while. Today's show is about the Free the Vaccine, a global movement to ensure that the COVID-19 vaccine is sustainably priced, accessible to all, and free at the point of delivery. To date, the movement has over 300 activists in 29 countries who work together to achieve weekly action involving innovative activism and equal access to medications. One of the major goals of FTV, or Free the Vaccine, is to have research institutes, pharmaceutical companies, universities, and government officials sign on to the Open COVID Pledge. This pledge is a commitment by holders of intellectual property to share their IP for the purposes of ending and mitigating the COVID-19 pandemic. In our virtual studio today, I'm joined by Julia Briggs, Sapna Ramappa, and Poppy Hosford, who are project managers for FTV in Ontario, California, and the UK, respectively. Welcome, guys.
Happy to be here.
So I'm curious, what are your academic or professional backgrounds and what drove you to get involved with this movement? I'll start with Sapna.
Sure, yeah. So I am a third year undergraduate student at UCLA and I'm involved with UAEM, which is Universities Allied for Essential Medicines, which is one of the groups working on the Free the Vaccine campaign. And so the whole premise of the organization has really been to try to engage universities in this access to medicines movement and access to medicines fight. And so it's been such an honor and privilege to get involved with this organization. And when I heard about the Free the Vaccine campaign, this was obviously for me just such a call to work on this because all of our lives are being affected by this pandemic right now. And just knowing that this organization that my values align with and that I enjoy working with was doing something creative and fun and finding different ways to fight for access to medicines during this pandemic was super exciting. As for professional backgrounds, I hope to get an MD, MPH. So I hope to work in medicine and public health. And I've always been interested in policy, social justice, and advocacy. So I've definitely found that my involvement with UAEM and the Free the Vaccine campaign really lies at the nexus of all of these interests.
Yeah, that's really cool. Thank you. Julia, do you want to go?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Julia, and currently I am studying with a post-degree diploma in clinical trials management, and I have also just recently graduated from the University of Western Ontario with a degree in biochemistry and cancer biology. Public health and access to medicines is something that I've always been really passionate about. And like Sapna, I've been involved with Universities Allied for Essential Medicines for a long time now. And it's just something that I'm really passionate about. Particularly, I got involved seeing the health disparities and the lack of access to healthcare that exists around the world, and then also particularly in Canada, seeing the lack of healthcare in the Indigenous communities here. And so that's sort of what really triggered me to get super involved. And with Free the Vaccine, it's something where this is affecting everybody. So I really want to make sure that when this vaccine is available and there's a safe and effective vaccine available, that it is widely distributed and available for everyone.
Thanks, Julia. It's really cool that a lot of us work or study in different areas and aspects of global health. But when the pandemic hit, we all sort of restructured and reshuffled to see how the pandemic and its implications can affect our area and specialization in global health. So that's really cool. Poppy, would you like to go?
Yeah, sure. So I went to university at Cambridge in the UK, and that's where I first got involved with First Students for Global Health. And then through that, UAEM. And I studied natural sciences. So I've always been into biology and medical sciences. But I always knew that I was probably going to go more into the policy side of things. I could never really imagine myself doing research in a lab. I wanted to meet more people-focused and more into kind of the policy where research ends up rather than the research itself. And through Students for Global Health, I heard a lot about the access to medicine stuff and got involved with UAEM. And actually when the UAEM UK set up a COVID campaign is when I got really involved and started doing advocacy at the university and talking to the TTO, which is the Technology Transfer Office at Cambridge, about how they license technologies and specifically in relation to COVID. And then I kind of got completely obsessed with access to medicines, and now it's become quite a big part of what I do.
Yeah, okay, thank you. A lot of the Free the Vaccine movement members and students, they're part of the UAEM, Universities Allied for Essential Medicines. Poppy, I know you're speaking from the United Kingdom. Can you explain the gravity of COVID-19 in the UK to date and what your respective national government or major research institutes are doing for the development of a vaccine?
Yeah, of course. Well, at the moment, as you've probably read on the news, Europe is not in the best state for COVID cases. In the UK especially, there's a huge amount of research being done on the vaccine. Probably all heard about the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which seems to be one of the most promising ones in development. Mm-hmm. So that's really exciting. And I've done quite a lot of work to do with the deal that Oxford made with AstraZeneca and how that may or may not affect access, which has been really interesting. And I've been negotiating a big push to try and get this contract disclosed because it's all very hidden at the moment. And actually, at the moment with the UK government, we've got a debate next week on access to COVID technology. So that should be really exciting to see what will be said there. But I think a general consensus in lots of countries is that governments keep on making statements saying we're really committed to equitable access and we believe there should be a global effort to stop this pandemic. But it's very hard to nail down exactly what actions they're taking to try and reinforce those statements. So I think getting things like debates in Parliament and things like that where civil society representatives can really try and hold them accountable is a really important side of that.
Mm-hmm. Are you working alone?
Well, for Free the Vaccine, I'm the only UK rep. So I'm kind of liaising with the UK lab, which is kind of what we call a working group in Free the Vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I'm also liaised with the Australia lab, which is called the Kookaburras. The work I've been doing with the Oxford vaccine and things, that's actually for the UAEM UK.
Okay.
We have our own committee that we we organise those kind of actions with.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Sapna, I think you wanted to pitch in here.
Yeah, well, I'm in the United States right now, and I feel like if anyone has heard, it's a mess here with the election coming up, and not to mention the incredibly high number of cases we have. I think we have around 8 million, or maybe even 9 million now. I lose track quite honestly, because it's just increasing so steadily, and there's this huge pressure to get a vaccine out and to have a vaccine available by the end of 2020. But then, of course, that begs the question of safety and efficacy, and also how would the government distribute a vaccine if it were to come to market, and also not to mention how to distribute it just in the United States alone, but even just what does that mean for the global population? What does that mean for the global community, and how accessible a vaccine is to them? Mm-hmm. So definitely a lot of questions that are being raised, and unfortunately, even more questions that are being unanswered. Mm-hmm. So there's the general lack of transparency. UAEM has launched this project called the University Mapping Tool. And so mm-hmm. what we're doing is, not only in the US, but all around the world, we're trying to track how much public investment is going in towards the COVID-19 vaccine and therapeutics and diagnostic tests. And ultimately, what we're finding is, not only in the United States, but all across the world, public funding is so, so important. And yet there's this huge lack of transparency with regards to who is going to be able to access these discoveries and how sustainably priced it'll be. Mm-hmm. So to make a long story short, there's a general lack of transparency. We don't really know what's going on, but given the election, everything has been very, very politicized. So I'm interested to see what will change and what will happen after this election, and if we were to have a new administration, how that administration will kind of commit itself to guaranteeing a greater access to the COVID-19 vaccine.
Okay, yeah, that's super interesting. Julia, would you be able to speak from the Canadian perspective?
Yeah, so in Canada, well, at least in Ontario, where I'm based right now, we are well in our second wave of COVID-19. We had a nice wave, a wave at the beginning, a steady decline, and now we're way back up again to the highest case counts, daily case counts we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And we have more restrictions that are coming into place. Mm-hmm. And more stuff closing down. So I think now more than ever, it's showing how we really do need this vaccine, and that we need it to be available to all if we want to get out of this second wave.
Would you be able to talk about what sorts of challenges the movement is facing currently in either getting stakeholders to sign on to the pledge or in terms of the movement's goals in general?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges is that people don't know that another system is possible and that another way for global research and development is possible. Mm-hmm. And this is just the system that we've had for so long of a research innovation gets patented and a pharmaceutical company has exclusive rights over the market, and therefore they're able to charge whatever they'd like for that vaccine or that drug or that diagnostic test. So I think we've just had this system for so long mm-hmm. that people need to realize that there is a different system that's possible mm-hmm. and that there is a system that's better. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of, honestly, we saw this in the summer with the Black Lives Matter movement mm-hmm. and the movement for defunding the police. Mm-hmm. A lot of pushback was because people couldn't imagine a different system mm-hmm. because this is a system that we've had for so long mm-hmm. and the system that exists. So it's hard for people to realize that maybe we can have a different system and that that system can be better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Sapna, I think you were going to say something here.
Yeah, I think in addition to what Julia was saying, there's this definitely just a huge hurdle is getting universities and institutions and these larger organizations to publicly and firmly commit to making things accessible. So mm-hmm. I think you had mentioned earlier the Open COVID Pledge, which is one of the main components of, mm-hmm. of the Free the Vaccine campaign, and it's ultimately a public affirmation and a a legally binding commitment to make the intellectual property for COVID-19 related research mm-hmm. readily available for the global population. And so that is a very tangible, like binding step for universities to take. And we get that. And mm-hmm. that's why we are really just trying to foster this dialogue with institutions and get them to understand how important it is to make that legal and public commitment. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, on the other side of the street is universities are having trouble doing this because it is a legally binding commitment. And I think that's why, like Julia was saying, a lot of these universities and institutions are looking at it with a press standpoint or publicity standpoint. Mm-hmm. And obviously, universities will want to agree, you know, we want greater access to medication, we want the vaccine to be available to a larger group of people. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's really a question of, will these institutions actually make the legal commitment by signing the Open COVID Pledge and saying, okay, now we will be changing our licensing guidelines and we will be legally like putting out the information and the research that has been done so far. So I think that's a big hurdle, is just not just getting people to agree with us, because I think a lot of institutions have agreed with the idea that it should be available and accessible and all of this, but just taking the next step and not like diverting the task to someone else to mm-hmm. to respond to emails and to have the conversations with us, but really just taking that final step of legally saying that they will do it. So I think that's been a huge challenge mm-hmm. That we've been facing.
Okay. Speaking from the American perspective, have you had a lot of key stakeholders sign on to the Open COVID Pledge?
We've had huge groups like Amazon, Microsoft, IBM sign on to the Open COVID Pledge, but it's definitely been more of a challenge to get universities to sign on. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're really pushing forward to in the midst of season two of Free the Vaccine, is getting universities to make that final step, because we have been engaging in dialogue with many universities, but once again, that final step has been the hardest push.
Okay. Poppy, from the British perspective, what kinds of key stakeholders have you been able to get to sign on to the Open COVID Pledge, if at all?
Yeah, no, we've had very similar difficulties with getting institutions to show interest in the pledge. Again, they often show interest in all the principles behind it, but they're very unsure of the restrictions of the pledge. Particularly, we've had a lot of universities say that they worry that it will mean that they'll have difficulty commercializing other technologies that aren't necessarily directly related to COVID, but perhaps have slight crossover. And I think there's just an overwhelming feeling that because it's a very unknown commitment, and to be the first university in the UK to sign up to the Open COVID Pledge, you would be taking a slight risk because no one else has done it and you wouldn't necessarily be able to predict all the implications. Mm-hmm. And that's a very difficult thing for us to get over, really, because we can give them all the information and all the assurances that the Open COVID Pledge team has said about the restrictions of the pledge, but really they're taking the risk of signing up to it. Mm-hmm. But I think just starting a dialogue, as Sapna said, is already such an important step. And the Open COVID Pledge isn't the only mechanism of increasing access to COVID-19 technologies that Free the Vaccine is advocating for. We also advocate for something called CTAP, mm-hmm. Which is called the COVID-19 Technology Access Pool, and that was set up by the World Health Organization. And that does a very similar job to Open COVID Pledge, but rather than being a pledge saying that you'll share your IP, you directly share your intellectual property to research at that institution into this pool that the WHO has set up. So that's another thing that, particularly in the UK with universities who weren't very keen on the pledge, we're trying to push CTAP now as an alternative, so that hopefully we can continue this engagement and perhaps get them to support CTAP, as quite a few countries have already shown their support for the COVID-19 technology access pool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm curious, and you definitely don't have to answer if you don't feel comfortable, but Cambridge University, how are they feeling about signing the Open COVID Pledge?
No, I'm more than happy to talk about that. So Cambridge does not have the best reputation for access and for generally being ethical about their research, I have to admit, especially in comparison to Oxford, which is something we really tried to highlight in our campaigning, because as you probably know, Cambridge hates being compared to Oxford when they look like the negative side of the comparison. So we did engage with our technology transfer office and we didn't have a very positive engagement, and we were not offered a meeting. They denied to talk to us, really. Whereas engagement with the Oxford Technology Transfer Office was much more positive, and they had various meetings with UAM members. And although they didn't actually sign the pledge, they gave a lot of explanation for why they felt comfortable, and there was quite a good dialogue. Whereas Cambridge, we were unfortunately denied even a conversation. But it's even just kind of being able to have know that we've been denied is quite an important first step, and that's why we then went to writing an open letter. But I think another project UEM does is global health report cards for universities, which is essentially where you grade universities on how good they are at doing research into neglected diseases for neglected populations, and also how good they are making sure their research is accessible. And in the Oxford-Cambridge case, we found these scores that were made a few years ago. And in this case, Cambridge had, I can't remember, it was something quite bad. And the Oxford one had quite a good score. So we could really literally put them on a poster and say, look, this is the comparison, and this is quite embarrassing for you, Cambridge. And that's a good advocacy tool, because that's something that we know that they really hate having put into the public eye.
Yeah. Julia, passing this on to you, you mentioned that there's, quote, another way to do things, unquote. And I find that with FTV, creative activism is one of those many avenues that's used to advocate for access to essential medicines, specifically the COVID-19 vaccine. Would you feel comfortable just explaining to our listeners what creative activism is and how it can be useful for achieving a free and accessible vaccine for COVID-19?
Yeah, of course. So in short, creative activism is a way of using art and culture to enact social change. So that's really what we're doing, is we are trying to use different forms of art and forms of culture in our communities. So this includes artwork, posters, protests, writing songs and music videos, and many more. So just using all this art, and art is so powerful because it can reach such a broad range of people in such a unique way. It can reach people who have never really thought about access to medicines before, and people can see these forms of art and really feel connected and engaged, and it's just such a powerful way to enact change. And I think too long in any advocacy circles, we've been focusing on sending an email, writing a petition, writing a letter. But then once you are done with these, what more do you go? And I feel like, where else do you go? And I feel like creative activism is just an endless possibility of using art and using different people's talents. And I think that's what's really cool about Free the Vaccine, is people are coming into this without an activism background, without an access to medicines background. But they're using their ability in graphic design and in music and in baking and in crafts to be able to fight for social change. And that really allows us to reach a broader audience and share our message with a broader public audience. And one thing that's really cool that Free the Vaccine is doing is we've actually compiled all of these, the art and the, and that everyone, we've compiled that everyone has done for Free the Vaccine into an exhibit. So now we have an online exhibit that's going to be hosted by different university galleries to showcase the work that's been done and what the outcomes of all this creative advocacy work is. And one really cool thing about the exhibit is that it allows people to get involved, because people can become inspired by what they see and they can complete these creative actions on their own and then submit it to the gallery to be shown in our exhibit.
I know you're a program manager, and obviously Poppy and Sapna are as well. What role do program managers play, and what are some of your day-to-day responsibilities? Open question for anyone who wants to pitch in.
I was going to say, program managers, essentially, every program manager is responsible for a couple of different labs, which are groups of artists and activists and students who have signed up to be a part of Free the Vaccine. So anyone who's signed up becomes a part of a lab, and then each lab has a project manager, and the project manager is there to be a resource for and a support for the labs. So when the labs have any questions about their next steps or about access to medicines or creative activism, or they need support in a role or don't know what their next steps are, we're really there to give them the support that they need and help to connect them with different labs or different people that can really help them. And then another role of project managers is to create a curriculum each week and lead. And we lead a session each week, kind of just giving lessons and teaching about access to medicines and creative activism and how we can use these lessons in the actions that are being taken each week in Free the Vaccine.
Okay, that's very comprehensive. Thank you. So coming to sort of a close then, and in terms of a long-term vision, what do you feel are the long-term implications of this movement for accessible medicine in the future, Poppy?
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, I hope that it's a really positive thing in many ways for the movement of access to medicines, because it should have drawn a lot of people to the movement, and it should have highlighted a lot of the issues with access to medicine, and particularly the issues with how research is conducted and how medicines are so much in the hands of big pharma, even though in most people would agree they should be a public resource, really. But I think one worry that I personally have is that some people have talked about pharmaceutical companies in quite a positive way in at times in this pandemic, especially when big pharma come out with statements saying we're really committed to access. And quite recently, Moderna made a statement of that sort, saying that we're going to make sure that our vaccine is going to be sold at cost, I think it was they said, or something along those lines. And then people can see those statements without really knowing what's going on behind the scenes and think, oh, it's really great that pharma has stepped up in the pandemic and that they're not just thinking about the profits. And for so many years, the pharmaceutical industry has had a pretty awful reputation in most ways, rightly so, in my opinion. And the one worry could be that this redeems them in some cases, and that would be a real shame, because you know a lot of what's going on behind the scenes doesn't really validate that redemption. So that's one concern, but I think hopefully just how much the movement has grown from things like Free the Vaccine, hopefully that will be the really big outcome of this in the access to medicines movement.
Okay. Thank you. So we are unfortunately out of time for today. I want to thank Julia, Sapna, and Poppy for weighing in on this important issue and for sharing their thoughts and experiences. If you're interested in signing the Open COVID Pledge or just learning more about FTV, please visit freethevaccine.org. This has been Health on Earth at CQ.
So, other than that, I mean, you know, what's going on? What do you say?
Buenas tardes.
And we'll be back.
Missed your favorite show? Not a problem. Go to www.ckut.ca and follow the link to CKUT's easy-to-use archives. Instructions are on the page. 2 months' worth of archives are stored in mono and half a month's worth in stereo.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal.
If you're having trouble, please email sys@ckut.ca. That's sys@ckut.ca.
Oh, yeah! I want to be your motivator.
Canada is serious. We must continue to practice all public health measures. Follow local guidelines for gatherings, maintain physical distancing, wash your hands, wear a mask, and download the COVID Alert app. If you have symptoms, even mild ones, stay home. Protect yourself and others. Learn more at canada.ca/coronavirus or 1-833-784-4397. A message from the Government of Canada.
Good evening. The time round about now on your dial should read 9 p.m. You're listening to Hotel the Blues here on 90.3 CKUT FM, broadcasting from a small wee little house nestled on the side of Montreal's Mont Royal on unceded Mohawk territory. To get tonight's program started off, we're going to a blues staple, a blues standard in its all its original form and glory. Here is Nat King Cole and his number, Route 66.
Plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to LA.